Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. This week's first contestant is a Swedish wheat beer from the Klackabacken Brewery, located in Scania. The second beer is a Dunkel Lager beer from Bayern, i.e. Bavaria, in Germany. The beer's names are in review order. Klackabacken Veteöl, i.e. Hefeweizen, vs. Barock Dunkel.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Our first contestant this week is the Hefeweizen beer assortment from Klackabacken, in the northeast of Scania. Sounds funny, Klackabacken, doesn't it? Even I as a Swede thinks it does. Hefe means yeast in German, and Weizen means wheat. I couldn't find this beer assortment on the brewery's website, but I could find it on Systembolaget's website. The ingredients in Hefeweizen are water, barley malt, wheat malt, hops, and yeast. The beer has got a 5.1% ABV, it says on the bottle. I think the best before date on this beer is April 2024. Today it is still mid-January 2024. The Hefeweizen beer assortment comes in a size 50 centiliters, i.e. an about 17 liquid ounces bottle. The bottle label is one-folded with a mostly orange color, but with a white stripe underneath. On the orange top orange layer, there is a man in a pair of carpenter's trousers, but with a horse head where his human head should be. The Hefeweizen cost me about 34 kronor at Systembolaget. That is $3.35. That is 79 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. According to Systembolaget, the preferred serving temperature on this beer assortment is 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperatures. The Hefeweizen from Klackabacken's Bryggeri has got a 5.1% ABV level. 5.1%. How about the experience then? Okay, let's see here. Let's open it up. Nice yeasty lager aroma, really nice. Got about a 2 fingers tall head so far. Yeah, 2 fingers tall head. And it's kind of cloudy actually, a little bit cloudy. And yellow orange in color. Golden like. But clear. Not clear, it's cloudy, but it looks like a clear color, so to say. Okay, first impression, it's a wheat beer. Mostly a wheat beer. It's fairly rich. It's a little bit bread-like, I think. White bread. Or a lot bread-like, perhaps. A little bit yeasty. It's malty. Taste on my palate, wheat beer. This is a typical wheat beer. Better than many German wheat beers, actually. Is it fruity? It's not Cadillac, it's not smoky, of course. Is it bitter, sweet or dry? Let's take that first. Sweet or dry? Mostly dry. It's not very bitter, but it's not strange since it's a wheat beer. It's not very hoppy either. Well, a little bit. It's not candy-like. Is it fruity? That's where we were last. Where I was last. It's not fruity. And no spices, I can sense. Well, perhaps there are some. I don't know. How should I know? I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. Wheaty. Carbonation level. I have... I think it's pretty high. But we'll see. It's not creamy, of course. It's not acidic, and there are not really any aberrations. No, there's not. It's of course not dark roasted, filtered or unfiltered. To some extent, it's not filtered. I don't think it's filtered. Well balanced or not, I don't know. Excuse me. So it's pretty well carbonated. It's well balanced. If you could say that about a wheat beer, barley wheat beer. Let's see here if there are any other flavors or tastes in it. Pineapple, pineal, apricot, light bread, banana, straw. Straw-like, but it's a wheat beer, so not sure. Then there's not much more to tell about this beer, except that it's a pretty good wheat beer. But wheat beer isn't my thing exactly. Wheat beers, I'm not into wheat beers that much. But what about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? Well, since I'm not into wheat beers, I'd have to grade this beer 6 devils out of 10 possible. But if I was into wheat beers, I would grade this beer 7 or 8 devils at least. 8 devils out of 10 possible. So It depends on the matter of interest in wheat beers, I guess, or your taste buds' inclinations. Anyway, let's move on to our second contestant. Our second contestant for this week is Baroque Dunkel from Weltenburger Kloster in Bayern, i.e. Bavaria, Germany. Kloster means abbey. Dunkel is a type of dark lager beer. The brewery has been brewing beers since, brace yourself, the 7th century. Okay, then I suppose they have had enough time perfecting their beers, and I expect nothing else than a top of the class beer, at least in the top of the class of German lager beers. The ingredients in this beer assortment are water, barley malt, hops, and most likely yeast. Standard German Reinheitsgebot ingredients. I shouldn't have to mention that, should I? The best before date on this particular beer is July 2024. At present date, it is still mid-January 2024. The Baroque Dunkel beer assortment comes in a for Germany typical size 50 centiliters, i.e. an about 17 liquid ounces bottle. The three-folded bottle front label is mostly white in color, with an inner golden frame and an outer blue frame, and the top label is red, white, and blue in color, with an inner golden frame. The Baroque Dunkel beer assortment from Weltenburger Kloster in Bavaria costs about 27 kronor, i.e. $2.70. That is 64 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. According to Systembolaget, the preferred serving temperature on this beer assortment is between 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says that the preferred serving temperature is precisely 8 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 degrees Fahrenheit. The beer assortment has got a 4.7% ABV. 4.7%. How about the experience then? Dark aroma, musky aroma, it's got about a 2 fingers tall head, and it's very dark in color, not completely dark. I can't see my fingers through the glass. Sugary, almost sugary aroma. First impression. As usual, I think the first impression is great, but we'll see. It's fairly rich. It's bread-like, like wort bread-like. Very much so. It's not very yeasty. It's malty. Taste on my palate is wort bread. It's a dry beer, which is good. Let's see. It is not bitter. Not very hoppy, but maybe a little bit. It's not smoky. It's not candy-like. There's no fruitiness in it. I don't think it's got any spices in it. The undertone is dark beer, or the undertone on the undertone, but it's dark beer taste. Carbonation level. I don't think it's very high, but I don't know. It's not creamy. It's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. It's dark roasted. Is it filtered or unfiltered? I'd say that it's filtered. And it's very well balanced. It's a good beer, I still think. There are no other flavors. It's very simple, a simple beer, but a good beer. Very good beer. Actually, I can't believe they have been brewing beer since the 7th century, because they did a very good job. Certainly a good job. What about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? Well, for a beer, for just any beer, I mean, an ale or anything. I grade this beer nine devils out of 10 possible. It's that good. But for a Dunkel lager beer, it gets a 10. They must have some pretty good recipe hidden somewhere in a vault or something. A money vault. I don't know, but it's really good. Okay. Absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. Why is the earlier low-intensity war in the Middle East escalating out of control? The following is a translated article from Eser Ekot on Saturday, January 13, 2024, by Roger Wilson, with the headline, "New Attack on Yemen, Houthis Threaten Revenge." Quote, "Last Saturday night, too, the United States attacked targeted installations controlled by the Houthi militia in Yemen, but on a noticeably smaller scale than the attack carried out on Friday night. According to CNN, it was a radar installation that was attacked. After the attack, a spokesman for the Houthi rebels said it would not go unanswered and unpunished, but the US military said, only a single naval vessel targeting missile was fired yesterday, far from any Yemeni ship." End quote. Let us dissipate the very formal statement made by the US. Who was it? US Navy? First and most important, on the night on Friday the 12th, The US Navy fired 60 cruise missiles, probable cruise missiles. On the night on Saturday the 13th, the US Navy fired only one cruise missile and one sea vessel targeting missile, as I interpret the information. So why did the US make their official statement like they did then? Quote, "Only a single naval vessel targeting missile was fired yesterday far from any Yemeni ship," end quote. Why didn't the US put it like the Swedish foreign minister Tobias Billström put it? Like this, quote, "It is important to avoid a military escalation and to protect the safety of shipping and the right to free navigation. The responsibility for breaking this development lies with the Houthis," Billström said. After all, the US does put it like that when communicating with the Chinese regarding, quote, "freedom of navigation in the South China Sea." The reason why they did not put it like that here is that the US Navy intended to send a stern warning that whatever you do, think twice before you do it, because if you make a wrong move, we intend to disrupt all seafaring traffic to Yemen, likely resulting in famine in your country again. And you could add, be thankful we destroyed your radar station. But the latter addition wasn't an intended message. It is too much of a meta information for it to be that. But I'm sure that they had it in mind. We'll see if the US Navy has put the blowtorch under the Yemenites' feet since I wrote this part on January 13, 2024. As we say here in Sweden, don't forbär a hundhuvudet, or approximately translated, it will be the Houthis who will carry the dog head, meaning that they, as the responsible part, will have to lower their dog head in symbolic shame, because they have no shame. Like a dog when it deliberately steals the sausage on the table, well aware of that it is forbidden, and calculating with getting away with it, as it steals it by later on when his master sees that the sausage is missing, plan to lower its head in a kind of pseudo-shame as the owner starts to yell on the dog. It can do nothing else, since it is its nature. It is just a matter of how cheeky the dog is. It isn't in the US interest that the Houthis interrupt seafaring cargo traffic in the Red Sea. And it surely isn't in Israel's interest. And it certainly isn't in Egypt's interest either. Nor is it in Saudi Arabia's interest. The Iranians truly know where to hit everybody, under the belt. But as I said, the mightiest countries in the Red Sea region don't see eye to eye with Iran, including Egypt, which controls the Suez Canal. The other strait by Africa's Horn, Bab el-Mandab Strait, is wider, not wide, but wider, and more complex to seize protected vessels in or around. Not to mention attacking ships they think are affiliated with Israel, when they don't even have any radar stations left. The strait is within comfortable and close reach for the US Navy in Djibouti, where the US Navy has a harbor. Let me explain. Ships are registered in only a few countries in the world. The most common registration country is Panama. Ships are often registered in Panama due to the country's favorable maritime laws and regulations. Panama offers a variety of benefits to ship owners, including lower registration fees, simplified registration procedures, and favorable tax laws. 2. As we say in Sweden, put onion on the salmon, meaning to top it with cream. The shipping companies have ship crews with many different nationalities, often Southeast Asian and I think Indian. It is not easy to ascertain the given ship owner's national affiliation either. A few registered names here and there may give a clue, but that's it. Just because the Houthis think it is so, it doesn't make it so. The register isn't a register of owner ethnicity, you know, and even less is it a register of the owner's choice of religion. And it is seldom a singular private person ship owner. Houthi numbnuts. They haven't figured out what globalization is, and what is more global than shipping companies. In an online article from MSN, Joe Biden is said to have sent a private message to Tehran that we're confident we're well prepared before the second US strike on Yemen took place. Basically, he's just boasting about the US military and economic muscles, and he is trying to intimidate Tehran and make them forget that they are closer to the oil in all the Middle East than is the US. But even if Tehran still realizes this, it will still not help Iran very much. My bet is on the US. The hazard is if Tehran spirals into a total war mindset and starts attacking Saudi Arabia's oil fields and oil facilities. Biden doesn't even try to hide beating on the war drums. On the contrary, he is also addressing especially US Navy privates and petty officers with the statement. He is saying, "Brace yourself, lads, it's about to happen," in an easily breakable code, even for a private. Every higher level of the US Navy officer corps and the Marines already know that it isn't even possible to jump into a war if ill prepared, and that it takes a lot of time to prepare for a war. They have also seen the causality of the preparations. If what I'm saying isn't true, then the US Navy and Marine Corps is going to get a beating. It is one thing to defend and another thing altogether to large-scale attack an enemy with the extended logistics lines and battle plans and all. Biden won't deny this if confronted. He'll just say that the US Navy and Marine Corps must prepare for any eventuality, and that's what they've done. He would just too happily admit to that. And to be honest, the mullah theocracy deserves what is coming their way. Let us just hope the Iranian civilians are largely spared from the worst when they get to that stage in the war. What is the worst? Thermobaric bombs and phosphorus bombs on cities are what is worse, short of strategic nuclear weapons. And the sources for this were Ezer Ekut and MSN. What if? In an article by retired General Major Carlos Noretniec in the Swedish Army, Carlos explains, or rather ISW, Institute for the Study of War, explains what will happen if the West lets Putin's Russia win their war of aggression on Ukraine. Good description of the situation. As Carlos, or ISW, explains, the prevailing opinion in fairly broad circles in Russia that the West is degenerate and ruled by conflict-fearing politicians who will not stand up to Russia will be strengthened. I guess the consequences of this are self-evident. I won't go into it any deeper here. It goes on. It is also not impossible that Russian successes in Ukraine, linked to weak Western action, can lead to China also perceiving itself to have gained increased freedom of action, for example, regarding Taiwan, and to assert its interests in the South China Sea by force of arms. It goes on. Accessing an additional approximately 35 million Ukrainians potentially means 2 million more, quote-unquote, Russian soldiers. It goes on. Ukraine is relatively industrialized. The factories will not disappear in the event of an occupation. It didn't disappear in by Germany occupied countries in World War II. The competence to produce munitions in Ukraine is quite high. But it goes on. In addition to the fact that the balance of power will generally be affected to NATO's disadvantage, the Russian practical warfare capabilities will also improve. The logistics organization will become more robust by increasing the number of useful railway lines and country roads in the east-west direction. The number of airfields that can be used, both for transport and for the deployment of fighter aircraft, will increase. The system of river canals in Ukraine will be able to be exploited to increase the redundancy of the Russian transport system. The possibilities of giving up terrain in one direction to be able to deploy troops in another will be improved. The air defense zone over southern Russia and in the Black Sea will be deeper and the air defense thus more effective. The number of garrisons in southern Russia will be able to be reduced and resources will instead be concentrated in other, more prioritized directions. Something that increases the possibilities of starting attacks by surprise in these directions. The need to carry out extensive and revealing troop movements before an attack will be reduced. And finally, most of NATO's European members to date lack the ability to wage war on a larger scale. The number of units is too small. The units and command functions are poorly trained for large-scale combat. The availability of ammunition and other supplies is insufficient. The newspaper Der Spiegel stated this summer that the supply of artillery ammunition in Germany would be enough for only a few days of combat. Carly's conclusion is basically this. Global stability would probably be affected by the West allowing a democracy to perish in a war against an authoritarian, powerful country. Future declarations that the West stands for and is prepared to defend, a law and treaty-bound international legal order, would ring hollow. Ensuring that Ukraine does not lose the war is a very cheap investment compared to the risks and costs that non-support would entail. That is all true. Just a few points I want to address. 1. Russia does not have the capacity to knock out all Western actors in a war. They can pick some territories, including Swedish, but they don't have any aircraft carriers, and they don't have access to free shipping in Western Europe. Not only military, but also civilian merchant ships need to be able to be protected by the Russian Navy. Therefore, a scenario where Russia is content with picking certain countries in the Nordics and the Baltics, and of course Belarus, is the most likely. That makes the situation even more risky for us here in the North and in the Baltics. 2. Russia's main weapon is division. The division of Western Europe among themselves, and the division of Eastern Europe versus Western Europe. But above all, the division of the European-American transatlantic relations. Putin is betting big that Trump will regain the White House. 3. But Russian unit commanders and units will continue to have a low combat value, especially if Russia does a Stalin and places police troops behind advancing Ukrainians in the future Russian military with loaded guns, ready to execute retreating Ukrainians. Forcing the defeated Ukrainians into the Russian armed forces is not a trump card. In this short term, it will have a certain effect, because as Stalin said, quantity is also quality. But in the medium term, it will lead to paralysis and a defensive mindset and recurring lost battles. One only has to take a look at the fighting in eastern Ukraine after the Wagner units were disbanded. Poorly trained and clearly unmotivated soldiers from the Russian Far East are driven to death in drowsies against a qualitatively superior Ukraine. And the source for this was secondary, carlis.blogspot.com. My name is Roger Klang. Thank you and see you later, alligator, at a while, crocodile.